Hi, I'm Adam Shepherd.
And I'm Jane McCallion.
And you're listening to the IT Pro Podcast.
When the world switched to remote working last year, many employees found themselves using their personal laptops to do their jobs. But as organisations struggled to adapt to the new situation, the question of how to keep these devices secure has become a thorny one. Without the layers of protection that typically safeguard corporate equipment, their personal devices could present a potential risk.
To combat this, some IT departments have turned to installing monitoring software on their staff's personal computers. But is this really in employees' best interests, or does it cross the line between safety and surveillance? Here to discuss this issue is Kevin Curran, Professor of Cybersecurity at Ulster University. Kevin, thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Glad to be here, guys.
So I must say, firstly, it is nice to have you on the podcast. You are quite a regular commentator on the site, you know, for features and for news to an extent as well. So yeah, lovely to be able to speak to you in person.
Same here.
So let's talk first of all about why an organisation might want to monitor a worker's device activity. What is the benefit of that to them?
The immediate benefit, the obvious benefit, is that you're able to see what your employees are doing. In other words, you're able to track their progress. And because an employer is paying the salary of an employee, now that doesn't mean that, of course, where's the boundary between what you can ask an employee to do and, you know, where does your power overreach? And of course, we have employment laws that help us with that. But in the mainstream, really, what you're trying to see is, you know, are your employees the ones that you're paying? Are they behaving according to policies you might have, you know, within your IT department or just within your employment itself? Are they doing the job that you're paying them for? Are they interacting with customers, for instance, if it was a remote call center or whatever else? You know, of course, in some ways you can see if employees are delivering, because employees are targets. So for instance, you know, we've known that salespeople are on the road for many years. You know, now maybe they do more phone calls or more virtual, but you know, for the last 40, 50 years, we're familiar with the traveling salesperson who doesn't work in the office, but yet how he's monitored really is just by his sales targets and he has to achieve. And if he wants to lax, or she wants to lax off and spend a day watching, you know, Netflix, well, then they just won't have any sales. And even if they do want to spend a day watching Netflix, but they're brilliant at, you know, at sales, and they bring in the targets, well, then the employer doesn't care because they met the targets. But it's not always that easy for people to have targets, really. You know, it's not that simple. So therefore, one of the ways around that is just simply surveil everything the employees are doing to see if they are working, if they're answering calls and whatever else that is.
Mm. Beyond the productivity perspective, though, does this have any bearing on security? So one of the kind of areas where monitoring software and monitoring technology has been brought up is in kind of monitoring workers' activity, essentially to track and identify potentially any suspicious behavior or, you know, any activity that may introduce threats to the corporate network.
Yeah, absolutely. That's apart from the obvious privacy point, with privacy and security go hand in hand, really. You know, the people leading the privacy movements in the world to protect citizens are people who have good backgrounds in security, who understand the implications and things that can happen. But in this case, yeah, security, because really, when it comes to remote monitoring of employees, you're really monitoring their browsing history. You're monitoring their emails, you're monitoring any activity they do, remote access controls, screen activity, and even time record, you know, how long they're active on their site or whatever, you know, your portal is, whatever else. So in that respect, yeah, you could possibly see that employees are visiting, first of all, dodgy sites, which is one way to get spyware on your own computer. And again, we can presume in most of the cases that the computer they're using is generally nowadays a laptop or an iPad, and it's given to them by their employer. So the employer has the right to do that. You know, most people have employer-owned devices. But again, so there is that side of it. But even with remote monitoring without it, because at the end of the day, unless you got plenty of time and you roll back and look back at all the activity of the person, you might not spot any employees going to particular websites and doing stuff. But there is a certain percentage of malware things that it will stop, but it really is it's more the privacy side. You know, okay, again, you could argue, you know, should an employee be able to use an employer-owned device after 5 o'clock when they finished? And then forget, obviously, the worry is they forget that the employer has got spy software on the computer and they go to something that they don't want, or they, you know, it could be perfectly legitimate. They might log into their GP practice and order a pack of Viagra or something, you know, which is fine, but you don't want your employer to know that necessarily. So that's the thing. So should they, you know, that's the thing, you know, but we need probably, again, we need to educate people as much as anything.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, is there an obvious line, or, you know, is it a bit blurry where you move from oversight into snooping?
Yeah.
And, you know, how can employers balance that?
Yeah, of course, because we also haven't said some employers will monitor, will have a video camera on, again, and there's nothing more intrusive in modern life than, you know, a video camera or a webcam in a room. Again, which can be turned on any time or left on. We've seen many examples of that over the last year, but, you know, with
I can't stop thinking about that Canadian politician.
There was another one last week. Yeah, the politician who was naked and forgot the.
Yeah, he was. He got changed from his jogging outfit into his suit in front of a webcam.
I totally feel for him. Because it's been a crazy year and we tried to, you know, we have back-to-back Zoom meetings and everything else, and you try to grab something between. And that's why I recommend anyone to get this to webcam slides. They're only about £1 on eBay or on Amazon, £2. Mm. And you get a pack of six and you put them over any of your devices, and it's a little slider and it fits lovely on your phone and your iPads on your, because I've been doing it for many years. In fact, I was one of the first in the UK to say I put tape over my webcam. That was about 8-9 years ago. And I got a lot of abuse for that. I got people emailing me saying I was weird and everything else, because now we all know that. And I've always said, I don't see it as a, I don't put the tape over. Actually, after a year or two, I didn't put the tape over anymore because of security, because I knew the odds on me being targeted with the webcam on and me not seeing it were minuscule. But just from the point of view, and I recommend anyone, because you can forget your webcam, your camera is on, because you can be using Zoom all year, for instance, and you know when you join a meeting, the camera is off, again, it can be up, and then you might be, someday you might get a Cisco web call, and it's the opposite, the camera is on by default, and you're just presuming it's off, and you don't even check, because you've been doing it for 6 months on Zoom, and all the other, you know, on Google Meet and everything else, and you forget that one time, and you're just coming out of the shower, and, you know, you're not trying to, you know, to flash the world, but flip, it can happen to anyone. So I would say that to anyone, just for the accidents point of view, is to keep them little sliders and buy them and put them over your webcam if you don't already have an automatic one. But generally, the rule of thumb is that the monitoring must be lawful, fair, and transparent, you know, and it must be specified beforehand so that the employees know what's being monitored, what's being collected. So it's a bit like the GDPR to some degree, but really the key is that the employees must know what devices are listening. Is it a microphone? Is it a video camera? Is it just your browsing history? Is your email? And, you know, and what time and what can you do on the device? And as long as you know that, and as long as they know that and it's being explained to them, well, then that's the key thing. If they do something afterwards, which puts them in a compromising situation, as long as it was fairly explained beforehand, well, then, you know, we could all accept that.
So that's perhaps quite understandable for employer-owned devices, but something we've seen a lot of over the past year is when everyone kind of had to switch very rapidly to remote working, there was a huge crunch on home working hardware, including laptops and whatnot, and many organizations had to resort to essentially having employees using their own personal laptops or PCs or whatever they had around, essentially. To work from home, just because, you know, there was no alternative. You know, you couldn't get a laptop in kind of March, April last year for love nor money. So if that's the case, if employees are still, you know, working off their own personal devices, how does that impact the whole monitoring situation? You know, can an employer ask or indeed demand to install monitoring software on an employee's owned personal device?
And it is, by the way, it's legal in the UK to monitor employees' personal devices, and it's legal to monitor employees' personal computers, but only if that device holds work-related information, or the employer wants to restrict use during working hours, and guarantee quality control or ensure that employees comply with company rules. But again, a business should all businesses should have a clear BYOD, bring your own device policy, and we do that. I mean, to some degree, it's just been automatic. For instance, for many years in my university, which I should have as best, but I have to have a PIN code, obviously, or Face ID, and lock in on. And we all have to on our devices because to connect to Exchange, it makes it safer, of course. It means, but and of course, they can wipe my device, even though it's my iPhone. But if it does get lost, I'm obliged to inform the IT department, and they should wipe. They should remotely lock down, wipe my device, actually, and that's par for the course. And that's important in these day and age, and it protects customer privacy as well. And I would have the same rules. I would create the same rules, because it's important to protect any customer data, or in my case, student data, or any legal cases I'm working on, wherever else. But of course, maybe employers in them cases will subsidize or give a payment to employees or whatever else, or maybe they just at least they have a job, that's all.
There's a lot to be said for that in this day and age. It's funny because actually I was under the impression that it was totally legal in the US to, install effectively whatever you liked on your employee's phone or
Spyware.
Spyware. if they're going to be using that device for work, but that it wasn't over here. I imagine that Europe is probably a bit tighter on this, just Europe being Europe, that is the sense that I would get. You can't just mess around with people's devices, and you would have to, probably give them a device if you wanted to monitor them.
No, it's legal in the UK. If the employee has any work-related information on their device, is using it to do any work-related, whatever tasks, even they might find their phone is faster, then it's perfectly legal for you because in some ways it's your data systems, it's your customer data, and you have to protect that. But of course, you're right, and it has to be made obvious to the employee beforehand and their rights. But again, I guess the employee could, of course, come along and say, look, I don't want anything on my personal device. So therefore, there in the case, it's up to the employer to obviously provide that employee with a device. And of course, what company doesn't give at least one phone or one tablet or one computer? I mean, they're so cheap nowadays. There's no company who would do that.
I think as the lines between work life and personal life kind of increasingly blur, I think this is becoming less and less of a cut and dried issue, because back in the day you did have, a work phone and a personal phone, and you could kind of largely separate them. But because everything is digital, everything is application based now, realistically, if you have, even if you do have a work phone and a personal phone, odds on you're going to have access to the same apps on both. So, you're going to be signed into your work email with your personal device, or you're going to be signed into your work kind of Dropbox account or whatever with your personal device, because, it's easier than not doing it, and it's massively more convenient. So from a kind of data privacy and a data access point of view, is there any value in making that distinction anymore?
And especially with the work from home aspect, because we've known that workplaces for many years now have introduced video monitoring. They've been monitoring calls and even a lot of places there are devices or computers, of course. I've never experienced that myself. Yeah, it's an interesting one. If I was given a job that was X percent better paid, but of course I would get around that. Of course I would dedicate a PC. What am I thinking? I've got 18 laptops and flipping.
One of my tribe.
I would just
one
accept
of us.
That.
One of us.
Yeah, increase. We just keep that forward. It's the fact is, okay, so we've known for years that there's video cameras on you at work, and you're not going to slap your colleague in the face, and you know, and your calls are monitored, and you're hardly going to start visiting, you know, extreme porn sites in your office space. You know, you're just not. So you would behave differently. But when you're at home, then the video comes into it. Then obviously the microphone comes into it. You know, if you forget yourself and you start browsing to dark places, whatever else. So it just, you know, there's new things people have to consider and things we never thought would happen, you know, probably for 10, 15, 20 years. But COVID has just accelerated so much of the technology world, the way the geeks knew where it was going. You know, we've known for many years that we've been shopping online, we've been doing everything online, we've been remote, but the public haven't been, and they've been shocked into seeing the world the way that we know it is, you know. But COVID has really accelerated everything by so many years, you know. And the thing about it, will it has actually increased the amount of now that's anecdotally, but I've seen where it has increased the amount of remote monitoring of workers, because in the past, you know, you'd have supervisors. It was accepted that the majority of your employees were working at their computers and you didn't have to do whatever. But when they're at home, they're out of sight, out of mind. And if you're paranoid as a manager or a CEO, you're going to just want to see what they're doing. And I can see that when, you know, when your margins for profit in most businesses, you know, are very, very small. And you're just trying to keep your, you know, keep the roof over your head and everything else. Like, you know, everything helps. And when people are kind of by nature inherently lazy, we all want to get something, everything for free. You know, it's just one of them rules we just have to accept in modern life. But again, it's, the more tech savvy you are, the better it is, or the more honest even. If you're an honest person, you have nothing to worry about, you know, or in that case, or if you're just doing your job and everything else and you don't forget yourself and do crazy things, then you have nothing to worry about. But the other things, it's in your favor if you're tech savvy, then to know what's, you know, what's reasonable and what's not. And some people have very illusionary thinking when it comes to security and privacy and these things, and they don't fully understand at all. They think everything can be hacked. They think that there's everyone's listening to them. I've seen that many times because I'm a professor of cybersecurity. I've been emailed and approached by people. I've met people in my canteen who had bizarre worries, you know, which were just like something in a movie. And I've seen it once too many to know that these were not just outliers, you know, that there is a small percentage of people really who really, really worry about being hacked and believe that they are hacked and being hacked every day. And they're on the phone to Apple, they're on the phone to, you know, well, usually, or you know, whoever else, you know, usually Apple. But
people have been watching that documentary, Mr. Robot, taking it too seriously. Now, I'm wondering, Kevin, you mentioned that devices are so cheap now. Realistically, you know, if there isn't a supply chain problem, then companies can and will provide them for their employees. Just the way that you do it. Has this experience maybe put paid to the idea then of BYOD? Because that was like such a thing when I was first starting. It's just, well, everyone's going to want their own devices and millennials. And then I found out I'm a millennial. is that something that you think is happening, or is BYOD still the trend?
But it's like everything else. I mean, at the time it was a buzzword, like everything, and it just becomes accepted practice. And of course there was a reluctant boy. We've all seen how large organizations especially reluctantly move into what is just best. In other words, so I'll give you an example, like for instance, the cloud. You know, like still to this day, like law firms are reluctant and maybe healthcare provide to move into the cloud because it's like moving it off third party, you know, onto a third party premise and everything else. But eventually everyone does it. My university, I'm sure every workplace for many years, you were not supposed to use Dropbox or Google Drive. And it was all your files were supposed to be held on the local servers. And I can understand that, but it wasn't pragmatic because when Dropbox took off, and also Google, but Dropbox in particular, it was such a well-written piece of software that synced in the perfect way, and we didn't have to use remote logins to our desktops at work if we forgot files, and it just made life simpler. And everyone was using it, and of course, everyone knew we were using it, but the official line was, you can't use any third party. until, you know, and then of course that changed. And same with BYOD again, you know, you weren't supposed to use in the early days any other device apart from the university one. That, but then eventually they realized, well, hang on, you know, and because everything speeded up so well, you know, if you remember mobile phones went literally from only 5% of the population having them to about 90% in 1 year. It was that quick. When they first came out. So, you know, technology accelerates at a huge pace. And BYOD is important because, again, employers have to be responsible for their customer data, and their customer data is handled by their employees. And if a leakage occurs, of course, they can be subject to large fines. They could go out of business. So they have to have the correct policies in place. You know, and you can imagine, okay, depending on the organization, you know, so you would have different BYOD policies, I guess, in, you know, Ulster University rather than maybe the Ministry of Defence, or, you know, you can imagine the National Cybersecurity. But still, generally, 90% of the rules would be the same. It's just, you know, safe practice of don't go here, don't do that, don't click on that, blah, blah, blah. Education is always crucial. There is one problem with the remote monitoring of employees as well, that the increased surveillance in it is like under GDPR, there's certain things which employers shouldn't be able to capture on this, you know, like our physical or mental health, unless we offer it, our sex life or sexual orientation, or they know what our racial origin is. but also trade union membership and everything else. Oh, there's things which employers cannot ask you for. But when you have now remote monitoring where things can be captured or everything you do, again, they could inadvertently capture that. And that's a kind of a gray line there, because what if they do capture it? You know, can they record it? Can they hold it against you? Or is it just your bad luck that you went to a site where you typed in, you know, that they found out your sexual orientation and whatever else? But I think, you know, there is people who don't like that, you know, and rightly so. You know, we want privacy champions along the way. We want people fighting their corners, but we also want our economy as well. We, you know, we want employers to have a fair chance too, because, you know, they're the ones who put the hard sweat in the early days again. You know, and sometimes it's too easy for us to see large corporates as being faceless. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, they're providing employment, really. And that.
So, in terms of the practicality of this, then, we've talked a lot about the legalities of it and, you know, employees' rights versus employers' rights and obligations. But we haven't really discussed so much the effectiveness of these measures. From a security perspective, how effective is kind of device-based activity monitoring in stopping, you know, cyber threats?
Yeah, stopping cyber threats, it probably, God, it's hard to put a number in that, but it probably has some effect because, like I said, employees, because a lot of the number one attack vector is still phishing emails, really. So at least with monitoring of emails as well, you're able to spot if there's one coming into all the employees, which is often the case. They bulk mail, you know, every IP or every email address in an organization. And also maybe employees really ultimately will think more about where they visit, what they click on, if they know that the device is being monitored. So from that perspective, you could argue that it is, you know, it helps in aids and security. But yeah, you're right. And productivity, I don't know how to do that, how to measure that. I haven't read papers on, you know, do companies that, you know, has anyone set up has anyone set up a blind study where they monitor half their employees, they don't monitor the other half, and then they compare the productivity at the end of, you know, whatever time. And that's the only way you could prove whether monitoring works or not. And I'm sure there has. I'm sure I'm not the first person to think about that. But from security point of view, it's a little help. But still, you know, you could argue that actually education would be better to give your employees training on security repeatedly, send them on courses, or, you know, give them whatever they need for that, or just train them, you know, have webinars regularly and keep, you know, that would probably be more effective. Maybe also just employ more IT security officers, you know.
one of the eternal answers to solving IT security, just throw more bodies at it. I think email in particular is one area where monitoring can and does work very well. And I think that's something that every employee pretty much kind of expects in terms of monitoring. They expect that their corporate email is going to be, you know, monitored and tracked for security purposes, as well as, you know, likely for, you know, HR reasons and, you know, business, you know, various other business business benefits. But another area where I think it can be quite successful is in picking up insider threats. One of the kind of slightly newer technologies that we've seen come up over the past couple of years is behavioral monitoring, where they can, you know, identify on a kind of very, very broad, you know, high level, this employee usually is active on, you know, their like cloud accounts or on the internal VPN or whatever from 9 to 5. And they're usually dialing in from the UK, and that's fine. But, you know, this week we've noticed that between, you know, 7 and 2 in the morning, they're active a lot more than they usually are. And they're dialing in from, you know, Hong Kong or from, you know, Hyderabad or whatever. And that's, you know, that's unusual. And that's something that we're going to look into as a potential indicator of compromise.
Or indeed that they normally, you know, kind of don't bulk download loads of sensitive files, but today
absolutely. I mean, you're right, there is a rise in a lot of companies offering and just machine intelligence being brought into the equation, looking for, you know, anomalies in behavior. But again, it remains to be seen how effective it is, because if you think about your network, you know, if you fire up a network packet sniffer like Wireshark, which we use to monitor packets flying over network. I mean, even in your own network at home, you'll find that you probably have 30 or 40 devices from your washing machine to your TV, everything, your speakers, all sending packets out over your home network, you know, to the wider internet. And you know, it's really hard to identify what's what or what device is speaking and where's it, you know. So therefore, when you expand that then to any, you know, relatively large organization with, you know, hundreds or thousands of employees, also, you know, and also a file copy, whatever else. And, you know, I'm dubious of a lot of these things, but, you know, I'm not dubious about things like firewalls or anything, you know, which are more rules-based, where you're able to see the latest malware coming in. You know, you're able to spot a signature. Okay, this malware has been sent, it's been spotted, it's got a CVE, and all those things work perfectly because they're basically rules-based. And of course you have, you know, I'm not saying all, like, even your virus scanners are heuristic, you know, that they don't look. They know that modern malware, the great malware, is always morphing itself and modifying itself. And there is AI playing there for sure, and it's wonderful, you know, along with rules based. But any organization, after a few weeks, it becomes just like any job. You don't feel, oh, I'm working for the NSA today and I'm working for GCHQ. You know, it just becomes a job, and you know you're working on important things. You got to be more, you know, when you're out drinking or a trade show, for instance, you know, you just got to be wiser about what you say, because you are dealing with state secrets to some degree. But after a while, you forget, and you're just trying to do your job. You're trying to move up the ladder. You're trying to be productive. And if you need a USB key and you know, to copy a bunch of files and take it home and work on them because you're really looking for the next and you have no intention to give them to the Russians, you know, you will just do that. And how the hell would any software spot that, you know, because like I said, every single file on older file systems should be sacrosanct. But of course, you got to get it from one device to the other, and people got to do their jobs. So people will always take shortcuts. And the insider threat, of course, is so hard to prevent against. You know, it's impossible, actually, if you're honest about it.
There's mitigations, but yeah, I think at the end of the day, you know, a really motivated insider is always going to be able to get around them. For me, it comes down to, like a lot of security, in fact, it comes down to that old joke of, you know, I don't have to outrun the lion, I just have to outrun the other guy.
That's right. Or, you know, that the famous is that, you know, that cartoon that does all the tech where they say, look at it, we can run a brute, where they've got a guy and they want to get into a system, and they say, oh, you know, we can buy, you know, £500,000 of Amazon cloud servers, and we can cloud crack this 256-bit whatever, and it'll take us 6 months. and the other guy turns, or we can just hit him over the head with this hammer and ask him for a password. you know.
That is an XKCD cartoon, which we will link in the show notes.
Exactly. But also the thing is, again, if someone came to me and said, "Good, I need to get I need to get into the account of someone who's famous, and they're giving me 2 million quid now." Someone who was a young computer graduate would probably sit there, you know, and take in cybersecurity and would think, okay. And then they'll start logging on to sites like Zerodium or go to the dark web and trying to find, you know, and by the time you get to, you know, and just, you know, how do I get this here and there and spend a few hundred thousand, whatever, because, you know, you're getting 2 million. But what a savvy security guy would do is you just befriend someone who works on Instagram and you pay them. And then they let you into the system. It's always the insider. And that's what governments are doing all the time. They also have people working in companies, foreign governments. They have people working in companies like Instagram and Facebook and everything else that are from overseas. And of course, the vast, vast, vast majority of these people are honest and tech people and blah, blah, blah. But,
it only takes one.
It does. They have got insiders in all the big companies, you know. But yeah, spies.
So, Kevin, for companies that are considering implementing some kind of employee monitoring, what would be your advice?
My advice is to be explicit from the startup. Know your employees. Maybe one size doesn't fit all. You know, just ask yourself about all the things you're monitoring. Like, do you need a video feed? Do you need to monitor emails or just a web browsing, really? But and explain to employees and just make sure you're within legislation, that you don't monitor, you don't grab anything that's not necessary for their job to be carried out, really. And that would really be my advice. And, you know, I'm not against it. I think we have to move on in life, you know, because in some ways, when you go to work, you'd be monitored. And, you know, even before the rise of technology, you'd be monitored at work by someone looking at you. But of course you're in your workplace then, and it's just that we all, and it is sacrosanct as well, and we have to, you know, keep an eye out anywhere where government or any legislation goes over the line against privacy, because, you know, we're all entitled to private lives. We're all entitled to, you know, especially within our castles, and some greedy employers could, you know, really try to extract every pound of flesh from their employees, really. But the majority won't. They'll just do what maybe keeps them productive, keeps them in the market.
Well, unfortunately, that's all we've got time for this week. But thanks once again to Kevin Curran, Professor of Cybersecurity at Ulster University, for joining us.
Thank you.
You can find links to everything we've spoken about in this episode in the show notes, and even more on our website, www.itpro.co.uk.
Don't forget to follow us on social media and subscribe to the IT Pro newsletter for more great content.
You can also subscribe to the IT Pro podcast wherever you listen to podcasts to never miss an episode. And until next week, I'm Jane McCallion.
And I'm Adam Shepherd.
Bye.
Bye. The IT Pro Podcast is brought to you by the Dennis Podcast Network.